You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Think about the number of times you'll send someone an email message, text, or tweet today. You've probably written your boss about a meeting, your friend about dinner, or maybe even your mom about the next time you plan on coming home. But can you recall the last time you actually sat down and wrote someone a letter that wasn't little more than a note or a holiday greeting? In his latest book, Yours Ever, People and Their Letters, novelist and critic Thomas Mallon remembers a time when everyone, from Mark Twain and F. Scott Fitzgerald to Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, put their thoughts, however lucid or irrational, on paper and sent them out via the Postal Service. It's published by Pantheon, and I'm very pleased that it brings Thomas Mallon back to our show today. Hi.
Thanks for having me.
You write in the introduction that if this book had come out as it was supposed to around 1997, it would have appeared just as email was reaching every man and beginning to kill or revive the practice and art of letter writing. It was supposed to come out in 1997.
I started this, 15 years ago.
What were you thinking at that time? It must have been something totally different.
It was, really. I had done a book about diaries longer than that, 25 years ago, and this was always intended as the kind of companion volume. And I had no sense of undertaking an elegy for the genre. I just thought I was going to explore the literature that existed. But shortly after I got underway with this, email came to everybody. And suddenly I began to see this material through a very different kind of lens. And the book, the long delays were mostly just a function of my writing novels and other books and having a very patient editor. But I think it was helpful in a way to wait and to see this material in a different light.
Is it safe to assume that you're a letter writer?
You know, not as much as I used to be, probably not as much as I should be. I tried in the book, not to be too much of a nostalgic, too much of a scold and whatever. I mean, I usually bring up the rear with technology, but I always manage to adapt. And but I do see in my own life, and I think in most people's lives, the letter becoming a kind of special occasion form.
Well, but and we talk now about how we've lost those letters because when they're on email, we are likely to erase them, although I'm assuming that if I received an incredible email message from a great writer, I might very well print it out and
right.
Save it. Still, even in the history of letter writing, an awful lot has been lost for one reason or another, because people burn their letters or because someone didn't consider them to be important enough. Only later did we realize what we'd lost.
Right. I think that even people with me who have a kind of archivist temperament, I mean, I'm a saver and I'm naturally disposed toward the past and so forth, I've been quite haphazard about saving emails. I mean, I have printed a lot of them, but I when I get a new computer, I don't routinely migrate everything to the next thing. And I wonder particularly how it's going to affect scholarship. History and particularly literary biography.
Well, do you think that an email message, no matter how long and thoughtful it is similar to a letter?
It depends on the writer. I have some correspondents who send me emails who write them just like letters. I mean, Patricia Hampel's a wonderful writer, essayist, and Trish sends emails that are shapely and composed and witty and whatever. And yet I think that when most people sit down at the keyboard, even if they're sending an email just to catch up the way you might send somebody a letter in the past, speed takes over at a certain point.
I know. I will often leave out articles and things like that.
Happy to hear from you. I still can't bring myself to send emails without salutations and closings. It just seems abrupt to me.
But you do say in this book, the small hardships of letter writing, having to think a moment longer before completing an utterance, remaining in suspense while awaiting reply, having one's urgent letters cross in the mail, those are the things that enrich it emotionally and rhetorically.
I think there is something to be said for thinking, for pondering, for waiting. The genre of the unsent letter is a very important one. Lincoln wrote a lot of letters that he just threw into the wastebasket. He had blown off steam, and that was enough. Whereas by the time one settles down with email, usually you've already hit the send button.
We also learn things from letters that we don't learn from other things. If we're talking about literary figures, their letters are often invaluable because we find out what they're thinking. They'll write things that they would never think of publishing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a place like the diary where writers can try things out and they can be very natural. They can adopt a completely different persona from the one that the public may be accustomed to.
And telephone calls, which started replacing letters earlier in my lifetime. You write, a telephone call or instant message actually conveys one place to another, whereas letters always convey not only a place, but a time as well, one that had already passed.
Yeah, there. I mean, there always is a sense when you get a letter that there's some interval that you've missed. You know, you hope the person is still as well as the person claims to be in the letter, but you don't know what's happened in the interim, where email has gotten so close to real time now that it's a different experience.
And this has all happened in less than a century. You quote the journalist and author Alvin F. Harlow, who in 1928 said, "The history of the Postal Service has been the history of civilization."
I think it's a bit of an overstatement, but I think there's something to be said for that. I think that the way in which, I mean, I think it's probably the most important, or used to be the most important government function, to knit people together with that network of communication. And now, of course, it's all done in a different way.
And he actually determined who wrote the first letter?
Well, there's
tried to.
there are different schools of thought about this, but he takes it all the way back to ancient Persia, and who had
Xerxes
the first...
was a great letter writer,
and who had the first postal service and so forth, but things have changed so quickly that. I think, you know, in real terms, we're still at the very beginning of all of this. After a dozen years, we don't know what it's doing to our thought processes.
Well, some of these things, you've organized the book with chapters with subjects like absence, friendship, advice, complaint, war, prison. Some of these things can be handled still by email, but others, those letters from prisons, for example, that have played such an important part in the way we have thought about history, they wouldn't have come out
no.
of a prison.
And I think also, too, if you think about the letters that go into prison, actual paper letters that prisoners received, the physicality of letters, the fact that somebody touched the letter, somebody scented the letter, somebody kissed it, put lipstick on it, the conveyance of those things, I think, has also been lost.
Do you see them as individual literary genres?
The different chapters? Well, I don't think so. Mostly as motivation. They're very porous categories, you know. I mean, and one of the things about, I think, a really good letter and a good letter writer is the variety within a single letter. But some topics or some emotions tend to preoccupy letter writers more than others.
They're often like essays, aren't they, in that they can mm-hmm. go from being about something funny to something really sad.
And I think some of the really great letter writers have had this sense of performance while they're writing a letter, that it's almost like making a present to somebody. It is this sort of physical gift, and there was more of a premium on entertaining and turning a phrase, shaping things.
But we also have letters that tell us a lot about history. Sir Walter Raleigh's 1603 letter to his wife.
Mm-hmm. Again, a prison is, Dr. Johnson talks about hanging, the prospect of it concentrating the mind, and prison, I think, seems to do that to a tremendous extent. I think that one of the things I liked most in writing about it was finding aspects of personality that one didn't expect with it. I think one of the biggest surprises to me was the love letters of Woodrow Wilson, who he's courting the woman who becomes his second wife while he's in the White House. And he's just besotted with her, and they're just goofy and silly and boyish and very physical, and they don't comport at all with that image you have of Wilson as this sort of skinny, professorial, moralist.
Racist president. That too. Thomas Mallon's latest book is Yours Ever, People and Their Letters. It's published by Pantheon. One letter writer in your complaint chapter didn't come as a surprise, Philip Larkin, who always seemed complaining whether he was writing letters or writing poems.
Yeah. There too, the performance factor, so many of those letters are to people like Kingsley Amis, and they're offered as a kind of shtick. You know, this was the way they talked to each other. But I think What makes
two witty men writing to each other.
And what makes his letters a kind of guilty pleasure in a way is that the anger that they have, it's not righteousness. It's not he's just constantly ticked off about things and, you know, very funny sometimes.
Do you think that some of these letters were written with the idea that I'm important enough that someday somebody's going to collect these into a book?
I think you see that happen in writers' letters when their careers take off and they become figures of consequence. They're aware that somebody's going to write a biography, that somebody's going to consult these things, and a certain kind of stiffening will take place. Some people noted this in the Elizabeth Bishop Robert Lowell letters, a wonderful collection of correspondence, but that Bishop becomes somewhat more cautious when she says things later on.
What about hate mail? Is that a unique genre?
You know, I actually think hate mail on paper now seems to me sort of tepid compared to what goes out into the ether. One of the things that really does surprise me about email and almost any kind of online writing, blogging and the rest of it, is how quick people are to anger. And I think some of it has to do with the way everybody is fighting for attention. You know, they're fighting to be heard. And people very quickly pump up the volume. And I think it's much more frequently the case that people take offense from email when the writer hasn't really intended to offend. But there's something a little bit cruder about the instrument compared to letters.
On the other hand, I would assume that people are actually writing more today than they did in the past. This mm-hmm. is not a matter of a society going illiterate. I've been annoyed by being in a theater and watching somebody texting up through the first act. Nobody would have been writing a letter while a play was on.
Yeah, and when I say we're at the beginning of this, I mean, there are young people now, some of them will think of email as something for old folks. Texting has become so much a part of what they do, and they find email kind of laborious and belletristic.
So what's being lost, actually, is handwriting.
Handwriting, and I think with texting.
But we're getting strong thumbs.
Yeah, strong thumbs and smaller vocabularies. I mean, Twittering and texting, you know, when you've got a limited number of characters, it really doesn't encourage elaborate expression.
Well, you address your readers and write, and yet I'll bet that, like me, you've been thunderstruck by the realization that you just sent a text message that read in its entirety, quote, "Are you there?" with the R being the letter R, the U being the letter U.
I did catch myself doing it. And like I say, I come late to these things, but I eventually catch up with them. I also, a number of months ago, I had a friend whose sister had died, and I realized only after I'd sent it that I had sent, in effect, a sympathy email. And as soon as I sent it, I thought, that's just wrong somehow, you know. And if letter writing has become a special occasion genre, well, this is one of those occasions I should have used it.
Well, I think one of the interesting things is that email is replacing telephone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're actually writing more, but it leads to something really odd because what we can resolve in a very brief telephone conversation sometimes takes 10 or 15 email exchanges.
Right, these endless volleys, yeah. I've noticed that recently. I spend a lot less time on the phone than I used to. And I think that that's probably a good thing, a civilizing thing.
You think it's all right?
To reduce the telephone time, yeah. The letter writing time, I'm not so sure.
Are you going back to writing fiction now?
I am. I'm in the middle of a novel about Watergate, which I live across the street from in Washington.
Thomas Mallon is the author of 7 novels, soon to be 8, including Henry and Clara, Dewey Defeats Truman, and Fellow Travelers. He is a frequent contributor to The New Yorker, The New York Times Book Review, The Atlantic Monthly. He's written a book about diaries. He's written another one about plagiarism, and now about letter writing called Yours Ever, People and Their Letters, published by Pantheon. Thank you so much for being with
us. Thanks for having me, Leonard.